ultimately, the approach to customizing is going to be the same. It's based on that individual. And that really, you know, once we get through their medical history, their nutritional history, and their physical examination findings, it really starts moving us to what are the pet's preferences. And so every pet develops preferences over time that we're going to need to account for during their diet plans.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Bioregion, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY Technology. Research-driven, pet-approved.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast. I'm your host, Julia Pezzali, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Jackie Parr about customized nutrition support plans for dogs. Welcome, Dr. Parr, to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be back.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to have you back and to talk a little bit about those customized plans for dogs that you have a lot of experience with. But for those who have not listened to your previous podcast, do you mind just telling our audience a little bit about your background and how did you end up in your current position today?
Thank you. I'd love to. I trained for 14 years after high school. I am born and raised Canadian, and so went through the Canadian school system up until the end of high school, and then was fortunate to get into the University of Guelph for an undergraduate degree with a Bachelor of Science and a focus on nutrition. I had already developed a love of nutrition from a young age, and I knew the plan was to apply to veterinary school. So after I finished up my Bachelor of Science honors, that four-year program, was lucky enough to get accepted into the Ontario Veterinary College for the four-year Doctor of Veterinary Medicine program. And so that was the first 8 years of my post-secondary training. I then knew that I was going to need to get some U.S. experience. That's where the majority of the board-certified veterinary nutritionists were at that time. And in order to become board-certified myself one day, I needed to train under one of them. So packed up my belongings and moved to Boston. I did a one-year rotating internship at Angel Animal Medical Center, where I saw over 600 emergencies in my first year of practice. And after that, I was able to stay on at Angel for a three-year residency program, specifically in clinical nutrition, which was the ultimate goal. To try to speed up the process a little bit, I combined that three-year residency with a two-year master's in biochemical and molecular nutrition at Tufts University to get additional experience in both research and academia. Following all of that, I did a postdoctoral fellowship back at the Ontario Veterinary College, where I was involved in helping Dr. Adjourney Verbrugge with setting up the first clinical nutrition service in Canada. And of course, got the opportunity to work with her and her incredible research program. And so the University of Guelph has been absolutely instrumental to my career, and I still have many, many great colleagues there. But that's sort of my very brief 14 years of experience to get to this point.
Awesome. And right now, do you mind explaining where do you work with and then your experience with customized nutrition plan for dogs? I think that would be great for our audience to know.
Absolutely.
As well.
And so when I finished up my postdoctoral fellowship, I was very much interested in academia. I love teaching. I love seeing cases. And I really enjoy research as well. And that just academia is just built for that. There were not any academic positions available at that time for me. So I was able to go into industry for 5 years and work in pet nutrition industry. And I truly believe that experience in industry made me a much stronger nutritionist. I was able to understand things from a different perspective than what I would have been able to get as just someone who's using the diets. I was able to understand the complexities that go into, especially veterinary therapeutic diets for dogs. And so That was an incredible experience. And then a position opened up at the University of Georgia. And I came to interview and just felt right at home right away. It was an opportunity for me to build a clinical nutrition service, which was the dream. And so being in academia, you know, having an opportunity to see patients, work with clients, being able to train residents and veterinary students, that is just a joy for me. And then you add being able to do, you know, ethical research on top of that to further our knowledge on companion animal nutrition. And it was just a perfect fit. So I moved down during the pandemic. That was a bit of a scary time to, you know, be leaving, you know, Canada during the pandemic to move down here, but 100% the right move to move to Athens, Georgia. And I'm very grateful for the role that I have every day. And it's one of those roles where I know I make a difference for pets and for the people who love them every single day. And that's incredibly rewarding.
Chem and NutriSurance is compelled to provide safe and delicious ingredients to improve our pets' food so they can have the best quality of life. Every day, they deliver specialized expertise, innovative products, and unrivaled support through the pet food and rendering value chain. From oxidation control and food safety to palatability and nutrition, all the way through a suite of tailored services that support you from start to finish, we ensure you're getting the most from Chemin ingredients. Chemin is compelled by curiosity to ensure pets around the world are living happy and healthy lives.
That's very nice to hear, and always good when people have the English experience, academic experience, and can combine both, because as you mentioned, sometimes it's easy to have opinions, right? But the challenges that industry face and how can we help them succeed and how they can help us as well. So it's a two-way street. So it's a very good when we can have that perspective.
It really is.
Funny fact, you were living in Canada during the pandemic. I was stuck there. So we have things in common. I already found some things in common. But jumping into your topic about customized nutrition plans, what is your approach to customize a nutrition plan for a dog when that comes up to you?
Great question. And it really is about treating every patient in front of you as an individual, right? And so there are, you know, many opportunities in animal nutrition where we have a herd focus, you know, in large animal species and you know, poultry flocks, that sort of thing. You're having more of a herd focus. But in dog nutrition, we are really focusing down on those nitty-gritty details of that individual dog in front of us. And so where I like to start is I like to perform my nutritional assessment. And so there are some wonderful nutritional assessment guidelines. They were first published in 2010 by the American Animal Hospital Association. And then they were published again in 2011 by the World Small Animal Veterinary Association. And both are excellent resources. AHA has actually republished them more recently in 2022 to continue to expand what veterinarians are looking at. And what they've referred to nutrition as is the fifth vital assessment. So vital assessments are things that you need to evaluate in a patient every time they come into a clinic, every time they're being seen at a veterinary practice. And so we've got heart rate and heart function, respiratory rate and lung function, temperature, a pain assessment, and then nutrition is number five because they need to eat every single day and it's so critical for their health. And so we try really hard as we're teaching the students that this is something you don't want to skip. You've really got to talk about this with every patient because otherwise we can miss things that could make a really big impact on that pet's longevity or their health. And so doing that nutritional assessment allows me to go through and get a medical history. I get a nutritional history and I do my physical exam. And so those three components, I get to pull those pieces together, medical history, physical exam findings, and my nutritional history to make sure that I am able to address anything that's potentially going on with that patient. If I have a patient in front of me and they're young and healthy, I may not identify risk factors for that patient. I may be giving the pet owner a pat on the back and saying, look, you're feeding a complete and balanced diet. You are keeping unbalanced foods like treats and supplements and human foods to under 10% of calories daily. Your pet's blood work is beautiful. Their urine production is normal. Their stools are perfect. You know, they've got great teeth and they're getting their teeth brushed. You know, they're on their regular preventatives to prevent parasites and, you know, any sort of, you know, infections that way. And so there are times where, you know, the animal's doing really well and we can say, great job, stay the course. It's a bit of a triage system doing this little nutritional assessment, because as soon as you start identifying a risk factor, then that lets you know that you're going to need to come up with a new plan for that pet's diet, because it's not well managed on the diet that it's on currently. So a really good example of something we see very commonly would be a pet that has become what I refer to as overconditioned. And so they're carrying extra weight, and that's impacting their quality of life. Maybe it's their ability to get around. Maybe it's their ability to go for walks or chase the tennis ball. And so once we get one of those risk factors, that's when we can have a conversation and say, we'd recommend making some changes. How can we go about this and making this successful for your pet?
So when you are talking about customized nutrition, interested about like who are those owners who come to you, are those that they reached out to the hospital or to you asking for help or an assessment, or they are already patients in the hospital, they are there for a specific reason that they are direct to the nutrition service, or they are both? So
yeah, it's both. And so we have pet parents that are just incredibly interested in learning more about how they feed their pets. They want to make sure they're doing it right. And so every so often we get someone with a new puppy that just wants to make sure their puppy's growing properly, right? Make sure they set them up for success. And so those are really fun cases, because you get to build a wonderful bond with those clients and those patients, and mm-hmm. you're going to get to work with them for many, many years, right? Like that's a great scenario. We also meet people that are faced with more difficult challenges. So they're coming to us because either referred from their family veterinarian, because, you know, maybe the pet's struggling to eat. Maybe there's a medical condition that needs to be managed through nutrition and they're struggling to get the pet to eat that particular product. Maybe they found that the pet will really only eat like a cooked homemade diet and we need to do something custom for that individual pet. And so we'll take those referrals. And then lastly, we also pick up cases that are hospitalized with us at the University of Georgia, because it's such a critical time. Our specialists do a fantastic job of identifying when cases need nutrition support. And if they have not already placed a feeding tube to provide assisted support, they'll reach out to us to get ideas and ask for a consultation. And so we've got multiple avenues that we can see these cases, but ultimately the approach to customizing is going to be the same. It's based on that individual. And that really, you know, once we get through their medical history, their nutritional history, and their physical examination findings, it really starts moving us to what are the pet's preferences. And so every pet develops preferences over time that we're going to need to account for during their diet plan. So
yeah. And that was going to be my actually next question. We have preferences. Pets, they have preferences as well. And what they were exposed in right when they were born and throughout the time. That you have owners that bring puppies and some that brings dogs that are much older. And then they don't probably sometimes adopt. They don't even know the history. So I'm sure like the first one is like meeting the nutritional requirements and guidelines. But then after that, how do you account for those pet preferences? And maybe what is the most unique case that you have seen about pet preferences?
Oh, great question. Yeah. And so that nutritional history is critical. I have a patient in the hospital right now that has very little interest in eating on their own. And there's going to be a nasogastric tube placed later today so we can provide some nutritional support, hopefully get them feeling better with all of the other medical treatments and intravenous fluids that are taking place. But we had, you know, the clinicians on that case reach out to the pet parents to say, what textures does your dog eat at home? Do they eat dry food? Do they eat canned food? If they're eating a canned food, what does it look like? Is it a pate? Is it more like a mousse texture? Is it like a morsels and gravy? Is it sort of a stew texture? Because every individual pet does develop those preferences over time. And we want to, you know, provide something that they're familiar with so that in that stressful environment, while we're trying to keep them from being stressed, it is always going to be a stressor for them to be living in the hospital when they're not feeling well. And so relying on things that they've consumed in the past and textures they've liked can help lead us down the right track. I've seen situations where, you know, someone's, you know, warmed up a little canned food and it looks like a stew and they're just, you know, they're trying to hand feed it. They're trying to get the dog to eat. And then we offer them a piece of kibble and it finally eats the kibble just because that was what it was used to. That's what it was looking for. And so we do sometimes just have to try multiple things to figure out what texture they're going to respond to. You know, if they have dental disease, you know, maybe we need to be feeding only softer foods because until they're more stable, we can't consider looking in their mouth and seeing if any extractions need to be done and focusing on the painful areas of the mouth. And so making some of those accommodations as we evaluate them is really critical. And we do see patients that, you know, over time, the owners have fed them a lot of, you know, what we call human foods. And so that might be a scenario where we need to bring out a diet that looks a little bit more like it's homemade. We're obviously not making foods in the hospital, but we have some packaged products that look similar to a homemade diet that if they've been used to eating something that's unbalanced like chicken and rice at home, we try to get them on something that's nutritionally complete for a dog to try to replete their nutrients when they haven't been eating in the hospital. And then we try to gradually introduce that with hopes that they'll maybe respond to a familiar texture. But it can be very hard once they get set in their ways with texture to try to really switch up the textures, especially when they're not feeling well.
Yeah, and new environment, there's all those scenarios that combine.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I think, you know, it's one of those things where understanding from the get-go how the family has been feeding them, what the pet's been responding to, what the pet gets excited about can give us some really good indicators for how we can meet the pet's preferences as we're feeding them. So you could recommend the most beautiful, perfect diet plan that's for that individual pet's medical conditions and say, this is perfect. But if you can't transition the pet to that food, then that recommendation doesn't work, right? And so sometimes there's the perfect recommendation on paper, and then there's what we can actually achieve with the patient in front of us. And we will always take the animal eating over, you know, eating the perfect diet. And so obviously I would love them to eat the perfect diet with the balance of nutrients the way that I need it for their medical conditions. But that's not always going to be the case. And so sometimes we back down a little bit and say, let's just get them eating something that we can get them eating consistently.
Oh, with dogs specifically, is there any approach you take first? So I bet it cats a little bit different, but dogs specifically, any rule of thumb or how do you go from those preferences?
Really great question. And so if they're in the hospital and they're exhibiting some signs of stress or fear or anxiety, I will try to save the perfect diet till they go home. I would rather the pet parent be the one to introduce it at home when they're in a less stressful environment. They're hopefully feeling a bit better because I don't want them to develop some sort of aversion because they, when they smell that food, they think of the hospital. Mm-hmm. There are some patients, like you get a Labrador or a Beagle in the hospital and it doesn't faze them. They will eat what you put in front of them, right? You're like, oh my God, how are you doing this? You've been so ill, but you'll still eat for us, right? And so there are certain breeds that you can count on to eat a little bit more reliably in the hospital. But trying to save that, if there's only like one or two diets that are going to meet their needs, we want to send that home with the pet parent, give them a couple of days to get settled, and then get them to do a nice gradual transition. And some pets will respond really well to the mixing of the food. So sort of doing 25% of calories of the new food, 75% of the old food, and you mix it in one bowl. Some animals need it in two bowls. They don't like their food mixed and they need to be able to sort of try it. And so we try those different approaches. If the animal prefers to eat in private, we ask that the owners don't watch them when they're offering a new food because then the animal may think, why are they watching me eat now, right? They never do this. What's up with what I'm being offered here? Why are you standing here, you know, watching me eat? And so trying to keep them to keep those feeding practices, that routine they've established, very similar as we're transitioning. if the patient's on a medication and it's causing some GI upset, we may have to continue to feed the diet that we were feeding in hospital, knowing that that might be our diet that we're sacrificing a bit. And then once the animal's able to be weaned off of those medications, we can start introducing the long-term diet. And so there can often be for pets in the hospital a short-term diet that we use in the hospital and in the early days of discharge. And then once they're feeling better, we start getting them transitioned to their long-term diet. And so we try to get those clients to follow up and have an appointment with us in a week or two so that we can reevaluate how the pet's doing. And then we can also, for the long-term plan, start to take into consideration the pet parent's preferences.
Benefits consumers want, partnerships you need. Schuller is your all-in-one partner for an innovative pet food supply. With an expansive portfolio and global access, we can source and deliver in-demand ingredients year-round. Schuller provides access to ingredients that are animal and marine ingredients, nutrient-rich, clean-label, plant-based, freeze-dried, sustainable, MSC and Marin Trust certified, and more. That means you can offer on-trend products consumers want without disrupting production. Learn about the benefits of working with Schuller. Visit schuller.com/pet. That's schuller.com/pet.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about the pet parents' preference. I went to vet school as well in Brazil, a little bit different than US and Canada. But my first year, I started working as an intern at the vet hospital in the nutrition service. The first job that they gave us, clean the bowl, so that we did that and fed the dogs and cats there. But we always had owners dropping off. I want to give this chicken. I want to give this A, B, C, D. And they had a lot of preferences and requests. So how do we also account for those pet parent preferences when you are customizing plans for dogs in the hospital, but also in a healthy pet that is at home with them?
It is a great question. And food is love for people, right? And so they show love to their pet through what they're feeding. And I think nutrition's a very unique field because we all feed ourselves, right? And we all have our own opinions about what foods we like. They can be regional and cultural and nostalgic. And, you know, there's so many different factors that influence how we select our diet. Finances is a good one even, right? You know, nowadays to think about how we're making choices for our own foods. And I do find because people consider dogs, not just, you know, family members, often furry children for many people, that they want to try to make similar, they want to take a similar approach to perhaps how they're eating with their diet for their pets. And so that ends up being a really good opportunity for us to use some open-ended inquiries. And so when we get a chance to speak with the pet parent, we'll often say, tell us a little bit more about your goals for your pet's diet and get them to really start opening up to us about what they're looking to feed. And so you're absolutely right. We have some people that will come to us and say, I'm very busy. I need something that's convenient. I'm on a budget. So chances are they're probably going to be feeding, you know, a majority of a drier and extruded food because that tends to be cost effective. And, you know, it's shelf stable. And so that could meet, you know, that individual pet parent's needs. We also have, you know, pet parents where finances are not even something that they ever think about, right? Finances are no concern. Money is no object. You know, they have lots of time where, you know, they'd be willing to, you know, cook for their pet and they really want to, you know, cook a homemade diet for their pet. And so we can do that for them, formulate that custom homemade diet, and then give them very specific instructions on how to prepare it because there is a danger with homemade diets that if they're not following the recipe over time, it's called diet drift, where the diet starts out being balanced, but then all of a sudden they stop adding the vitamin mineral supplement because they forgot to order it. Or they find that white potatoes were on sale, so they got white potatoes instead of sweet potatoes, which changes the nutrient profile entirely. And so we always try to account for what the individual pet parents, you know, preferences are. And sometimes that can make the situation a little bit more complicated, right? Because our first goal is to treat that individual patient's needs and balance the nutrient profile to make sure the pet would eat it through their preferences. And then as we layer on the pet parent preferences, sometimes that can really narrow the options that we have available to us. And then we just need to have an upfront conversation and say, we can account for, you know, your preferences if we go this way, but it may limit the other options that we have in order to account for that preference. And so we like to just be upfront. And if we run into a situation where we're not comfortable with pursuing that pet owner's preference. So a really good example would be, and I'll just tie this to a cat for now, feeding a cat a plant-based diet, not having any animal-based products in a cat diet. Well, that's going to be something where I'm going to have a really detailed conversation with the owner and have them tell me a little bit more about their concerns. And, you know, maybe they practice a vegan lifestyle and they were interested in seeing if their cat could go on a plant-based diet. And so we can have a conversation about what we feel comfortable with and what's really going to be best for meeting their cat's needs as a carnivore. So we try to always have a conversation and just give people options when we can, and we try to listen and not judge and make sure we're, you know, taking in what they're telling us, because at the end of the day, they need to feel comfortable with feeding that product or making that food for their pet, because that's the only way you can stick with the diet plan is if you feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, and there are different ways to achieve those nutritional recommendations and requirements, so it's important to understand what the pet parent wants to provide for the pets, because as you mentioned, connection is love, and yeah, as a nutritionist, our job to listen to them and then to make sure we are providing those nutritional requirements, but also taking their preference so they stick to that customized plan.
Absolutely. We spend a lot of time focused on the pet owner's goals when we're doing consultations so that we can really understand where they want to take next steps, because we can get a pretty good sense of what we need to do for the pet. And we can get a pretty good sense of the pet's preferences. But I would say probably one of the longer parts of the conversation ends up being, what are the pet owner's goals around diet and what do they feel comfortable with and what are they hoping to do? So,
and with the pet parents, what role does cost play in developing those custom nutrition support plans?
Yeah, such a great question. And we see the whole spectrum, right? We will have people that come to us and they're very, you know, very upfront and say, I have X, Y, and Z cost concerns. And so what we try to do for that pet parent is have them figure out a daily budget. What is their daily budget that they could allot to feeding their pet? We know that the pet is going to need to eat every single day. And so what can they set aside that means that they can also feed themselves, right? We want everybody to be nourished. I had a client at one point that was making a homemade diet for her two large breed dogs. She was buying all these organically, you know, produced products. And then she was eating Doritos herself. And I was like, you know, tell me a little bit more about this. Like, is this like, did you spend all your money, you know, your budget for food on your dogs? And the answer was yes. And I was like, okay, I think we're going to take this back a step and I want you to eat as well, right? Like, I know that you love your pets, but, you know, and I need you to be here to care for your pets. And so let's see what we can do to back off a little bit. And so we had a great conversation about organic agriculture versus traditional agriculture. And we were able to, you know, save some costs there. We were able to work in some dry food to meet her daily budget. And then she was able to then, you know, have a more healthful diet for herself as well. It's just, you know, people love their pets so much. And I'm in that category too. They will do anything for them. And so sometimes I see people that are even sacrificing themselves for the benefit of their pet. And so we try to think about our clients as well too. And that daily budget has been a really good conversation. So is it, you know, the cost of a coffee or less, right? Like, you know, where do you get your coffee? You know, sort of giving them something, you know, relatable. Could we have you make your coffee at home? And could we put that, you know, $3 towards, you know, this per day. And then that will guide us down our different options for diets. We have some clients at the opposite end of the spectrum where they are wealthy and finances are not an issue. So for even some of those clients, they want their pet on a custom homemade diet. We have some partners that we'll work with that will actually make that diet in their kitchen and ship that diet to them on dry ice. And so that's sort of the most, that's going to be the most costly, right? A custom diet made in a pet kitchen, shipped on dry ice to a pet owner. And then you can sort of go all the way down the spectrum. And so we like to have the cost conversation because in today's day and age, it absolutely could be part of the conversation. And I think it just helps us meet the client's needs a little bit more if we can have an open and honest conversation. And most of our clients are really thankful that we ask about their budget because sometimes it's hard for people to bring that up, right? And so we'll just ask, you know, do you have a budget in mind? Do you need to think about your budget and, you know, look at your finances? We want to work with you so that we can come up with a sustainable program.
Yes, no, that's so true. And I think sometimes people have this idea in mind, they want to feed A, but they don't think about the cost of A. And then having those conversations, they can really understand.
Yeah, if they're going to do a homemade diet, you know, we have clients that make a full month of food for two large breed dogs, and it's a weekend project for both the husband and wife. And that is what they do, right? It's a, you know, it can be a big project for people. And they are very dedicated to it, but it is a time commitment, right? And so thinking about the time commitment, I think, is important for people as well. So I think, too, one of the things people will struggle with is sometimes they get the idea that they want to feed a homemade diet, but they don't cook themselves. And so having, you know, that conversation with them about, you know, this is going to require learning how to cook some things. You're going to have to learn a bit about food safety and safe food handling and food storage and all these sorts of things. And we're very happy to help them. But for someone who doesn't cook for themselves, it's a much bigger learning curve, right? For if they're considering pursuing something like a homemade diet. So
that's my case. I'll never feed my pets a homemade diet because I hate cooking. I don't want to cook for myself. I'm not going to cook for my pet. So the pet food industry does a much better job than I do. And then I buy the nutrition diets that they made. So I'm not cooking for my pets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's one of those things where we've got to take all of those factors, you know, into consideration for that individual pet. I've had a scenario where working with a wonderful client, their family, beautiful cat that we were trying to get to eat. It was one of those things where, you know, I said to them, you know, I can give you the recipe. And they actually had a chef in their home that was the chef prepared food for them. And so the recipe that I made for their cat was going to go to their personal chef, and the personal chef was going to start preparing the cat's diet. And so we come across all different scenarios, and we're happy to work with everybody and to try to, you know, really meet people's goals while they're trying to provide for their pets.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition. We partner with a purpose.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Parr, for joining us again today. And I hope to have you back to talk maybe a little bit more about cats. I bet they're a little bit more challenging and complicated sometimes to those customized plans.
Absolutely.
But before I let you go, I want to ask you two last questions. One is, what is your favorite book or resource to recommend for pet owners when they want to learn more about nutrition? Because I bet those that want to feed a customized plan, they're interested, they want to learn, and there are so many not great resources online and so much misinformation. So what is a good resource for them that you recommend?
Really great question. And I think the World Small Animal Veterinary Association has some really nice materials in their nutrition toolkit that they've published, just good basic information. And so, you know, they've got a little handout talking about, you know, good example would be why you wouldn't want to use a pet food ratings website. They often rate the foods based on cost, and there's certain, you know, special ingredients that they may highlight. And, you know, they'll look at a lot of marketing terms. And so they're often not ranking food on the nutritional balance or what it's intended to do. And so just little tips like that, where while very well intentioned, it can make it a lot more confusing for a pet parent to try to figure out what they are supposed to feed. And so I think, you know, potentially looking at some of those resources is a great opportunity for pet parents to just get their foot in the water. And then the other thing is, when you go to your annual exam at your veterinary clinic, ask them your nutrition questions, right? Say, you know, could you, you know, if you've got a specific question for your specific pet, then that veterinary team can help you address that question there that's very specific, because the information on the internet tends to be very general. And so I would say, save those questions. You know, there's very well-intentioned, you know, Facebook chat groups and, you know, people on Instagram and YouTube. And again, they're trying to put out content to help people, but unfortunately, sometimes they just don't have that expertise to do it in a way that that won't cause harm over the long term. And so I think do be cautious about what resources you're using. Utilize resources like the World Small Animal Veterinary Association's toolkit, and then speak with the veterinarian and the technicians and the assistants at your pet's annual examination. It should be part of the conversation at every annual examination, and make sure that they feel your pet is doing well on the current diet. And if you don't feel that the pet's your pet is doing well on the diet, well then, speaking with the veterinary team is a really great way to get some guidance on how to change things.
And my last question, what is your favorite book or resource that is not related to clinical nutrition, something that you like reading outside and then give you like it a great learning opportunities and thoughts as well?
I am a big fan of just like self-help books, for lack of a better term. And so one of my favorite authors is Brené Brown. And I think probably my favorite one of hers is the Gifts of Imperfection. Being in academia, I think I have a tendency towards trying to be a perfectionist, as many of us do that are, you know, that have chosen to go to, you know, school for a very long time, have trained for a long time. And so every so often I need to go back and just brush up on it and remind myself that none of us need to be perfect. And so, and life is not perfect. And it's often the challenges that are the most interesting. And so I think that that's one of my favorite books.
That's awesome. And there is the Lead Then Theory that Mel Robbins just launched. That's in my next one to read. Everyone is talking really good things about that one.
Oh, amazing. That's great. And she's got a great Netflix special too that I really enjoyed. So yeah, she's fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Dr. Parr, for joining us again today. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And for you to also, thank you for sharing your knowledge with our audience. And I hope you to have you back to talk a little bit more about cats and then the challenges with planning customized feeding for them. So thank you very much for joining us again.
You're welcome.